T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Day, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Rusty Hart, defense attorney for Browns quarterback Deshaun Watson. Rusty, thank you so much for the time today.
Glad to.
So what are you expecting to see tonight?
I think more of the same. Both of the women that they, at least in their promos, are talking about are people that have been in the media before making the same allegations. And the allegations are not different. At least what they put in the promo is what they've been saying all along. And that we've taken great issue with. So I have any idea specifically whether there'll be additional stuff. So all I know is the promos, and it looks like more of the same.
Do you think?
No, sorry, Rusty.
More of the same that we take great issue with. I want to add that we have been denying the allegations that they're voicing tonight from the very beginning. Deshaun has, at least.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you, Rusty. I mean, it seems as though, you know, recently you guys, your camp, has decided to speak out a little bit. At least you certainly have. You were on the podcast yesterday. You're on with us today. You've done some other things. Are you concerned about the public perception of how Deshaun's, you know, looked at when it comes to these interviews tonight and going forward?
Well, I am, and you're right, and on both counts, we are. This is occasion to speaking out more. You have to remember real quickly what's happened here. When it first broke, for the first month, we didn't even know who these women were because they filed them anonymously and refused to tell us so that we could, while we were getting killed on social media and everything, we didn't know who they were. Deshaun was able to, and we were able to deny that he engaged in that type of conduct. But we couldn't get specific with each person because we didn't know what their names were. And by the time we got their names, there had been this incessant drumbeat of publicity because of the way the plaintiff's lawyer decided to roll these out. Two today, three tomorrow, three more the next day, et cetera, all as a constant drumbeat, each being reported, and so on. So by the time we got into this, when we initially tried to respond and counteract the publicity, it became very clear early on we were not going to be able to win the battle in the court of public opinion. And when we got up to 22, nobody was willing to listen to our denial because how could 22 people be wrong? So I quickly, rightly or wrongly, decided within 60 days or so, that is a battle we can't win, at least now. So we chose to focus on what were the most relevant things to his future, whether or not he was going to be criminally charged, and then what was the NFL going to do. And then we would deal with the civil cases as we went along and try to handle those in the court. Because of the drumbeat of publicity by the other side and the allegations sounding so bad and the conduct alleged by the individual plaintiffs sounding horrible, I mean, I'm grossed out by what they contend he did. I can't imagine what the average citizen thinks when a man of this previous reputation is accused of all this. So that was, we decided not to battle in the area of me like now. So I declined most public appearances. We would have a particular press conference to try to counteract a piece of misinformation that we thought was really wrong and damaging. But as a whole, the playing field was turned over to the other side. Media consultants would tell you that was a huge mistake. I say that from the background I came from and what I was most concerned with, it was the most responsible thing. If I got down in the gutter to answer every misrepresentation that the lawyer was making, then all I would do was be right there with him. And prosecutors, because I was one for over 15 years, always resent the accused being out there using the media to put pressure on them to their conclusion. So I decided some of the cases were the most important, immediate danger and need, that's where we would focus. And so we cooperated with everything. We gave the police everything. We gave the DA's office everything. And they and simultaneously kept the NFL informed and also the civil cases going forward. When the criminal charges were declined because two different grand juries found there was no evidence of any criminal conduct, and the things that were alleged would be criminal if believed, but no one seems to want to focus on it. Now, they only had 10 cases of the 22 before them, but they specifically rejected all of the allegations of Ms. Solis, who's one of the women being featured tonight. Nobody's really paid much attention to that. If he had done what each of these women were alleging, there would have been a criminal case. There was none. Grand juries take they decide, is there any probable cause to believe that a criminal offense occurred, felony or misdemeanor? And both in two different counties, two different women professional prosecutors running the investigations found no probable cause that any criminal event was occurred. And so then when that was over, we moved our attention to the NFL, and that's where we are now.
Rusty, you mentioned the you know, the 10 women who were not able to, you know, their allegations were not criminal. What about the other 12? Are those cases going to go to a grand jury or no?
No, it's over. I mean, neither one of these grand juries are going to consider any more cases. And actually, Brazoria County only had one, and that was because the massage happened in their bedroom community of Houston. Or they wouldn't want to call it a bedroom community of Houston. Their adjoining county. So then that was the other nine occurred in Houston. No, look, grand jury and prosecutors, if they believed criminal offenses occurred against the other 12 women, they had all that information before them. They could have moved their investigation and sought indictments there. Let me give you an example. Two of the only three women in these 22 alleged any type of force was used. Two of those three were the cases before the grand juries, and they were rejected. One did not make a complaint, and her testimony was taken at a deposition yesterday, and contrary to her petition and contrary to the publicity, she under oath yesterday swore there was no force used in her encounter. So that means all three of the forcible allegations are gone. What was significant, particularly yesterday in her deposition, is she was the third lawsuit filed. It was filed the morning after the first lawsuit was filed the night before. She was the first to allege any force, and that's what set off the media and public storm. The fact that this young man with this sterling reputation before had supposedly forcibly had forcibly made a woman give him oral sex, and that was the allegation. And that began the firestorm. And now we know, 14 months later, she sworn under oath there was no force used.
Rusty, I have so many questions to ask you. Rusty Harden joining us, Deshaun Watson, defense attorney here on 92.3 The Fan. Rusty, what's the rate of indictment for grand jury cases? It's not a very high bar. Is that accurate to say?
Well, no. I mean, for instance, I used to chafe under the allegation when I was a prosecutor, but now it conceded it's usually true. And the old phrase is, a prosecutor that wants an indictment can get a ham sandwich indicted. And it's a very low bar. Because remember what a grand jury is deciding. They're not deciding guilt or innocence. They're deciding simply, is there any credible evidence that an offense was committed? And as I said before, a felony or misdemeanor. The grand jury could have returned charges on either of those. So when a grand jury says no criminal offense occurred, that is a huge, huge event that should have been given a lot more credence than it has been. Indeed, that's one of the conditions we have with the NFL. Listen, whether or not he violates the code of conduct, that issue, if you look at the code of conduct, was decided when no force was used. The grand jury considered the issue of whether there was forcible behavior. They considered of two. They found no evidence of it. And yesterday, the third said no force was used. So there is no basis for going forward, further, I guess. But my point is that's our frustration with all of this, is that there was not more attention paid to the significance of those no bills.
So I guess I want to follow with two things. Number one, the NFL still suspended Ben Roethlisberger, even though he was not criminally charged. They suspended Ezekiel Elliott, even though he was not criminally charged. And I want to go back to the podcast you did yesterday, because I want to make sure I heard this right. And I think you're talking about it now. Did you say yesterday only two of the cases fall under the NFL's code of conduct out of the 22? Only two of the 22 would be in question. Is that fair?
No, it'd be three.
Three. Okay.
So if you look at the NFL's code of conduct, the first two items listed have to do with forcible conduct. Okay. Some type of forcible sexual conduct. They do not cover consensual sexual conduct. And so if you now the NFL may disagree with me, and I want to make it clear, this is Rusty Harden's interpretation. They haven't signed on with this to me. But if you look at it, the three that allege force, first of all, would have been crimes, and the three that allege force would have all violate the code of conduct. So when you mention other people that have been suspended because of some type of conduct, you have to look at, and even though there were no criminal charges, you have to look at what was the conduct was alleged. And what I was saying yesterday or day before, actually, I think I gave the podcast, I mean, the podcast occurred maybe 4 days, 5 days ago. Doesn't matter. What I was saying was the only conduct these women allege that violates the code of conduct are those that alleged force. Okay. And so if it didn't allege, if it is found that it did not engage in any type of forcible sexual misconduct, then he hasn't violated, under the allegations they're making, the code of conduct.
I can't say
they're going to agree with you, but I truly believe that's the case.
I see. Okay. So there's two areas that still trip me up. And one of them is just the sheer number of therapists that he's seen, not even the allegations, but the 22 cases and then the 18 that came out in support of him. Right there is 40. I've talked to athletes in the past who've said, like, man, you find one therapist, you stick with them. You don't shop around like this. So can you explain just the sheer number? And then also, you know, I have to say, I've had a lot of massages in my life, and none of them ended in any sort of sexual act of any kind. So is there concern over that he's admitted to that there's been consensual sexual acts during what was supposed to be a therapeutic massage?
Absolutely was. And there are only three of them that he has said any sexual conduct occurred. And all three of them, he has said, were consensual. And two were consensual oral sex. And the third, he has said, and been very clear about, was a regular sexual event that occurred after the massage. He has insisted, believably, that all three were the initiation of the particular therapist, and they all occurred after the massage was over. The rest of the massages he's got, think about that a minute. There are only three of them in which there's any type of sexual activity. And yes, he does have a tremendous number of massages. But interestingly enough, one of the women that has made the allegation, one of the things she poo-poos is not being unusual. She says she does, a professional baseball player that gets 2 to 3 massages a week and has for some time. And she has been massaging him for a long time. It's not unique. He does take more massages than a lot of players, but it's always the same areas. They were all in the groin area for his abs and his glutes and so on, psoas. And all of these areas are in the groin area. He actually had a video, a screenshot of the recommendations of the areas that he get massaged by the team. And so there was nothing unusual in his life for the kind of massage and treatments that he wanted that was unusual or not. And there'll be experts that say that. And many of the massage therapists who came out in his support as soon as the charges came. There were 18 licensed massage therapists who all said they had been doing massages of him before the virus hit, and they'd done it for a couple of years, never had any incidents with him, and he always wanted the same areas massaged, and they did so, and there was nothing unusual about it. Now, when the virus hit, there were no other massage therapists. For 90 days in Texas, it was illegal by order of the governor. And so he started going on Instagram. There, none of which, by the way, is against the law. Instagram is the very vehicle in which Mr. Busby advertised seeking these cases as soon as he had one. If you had a massage from Sean Watson and this all went out on Instagram, contact us. The women themselves, of course, were marketing their services on Instagram. Deshaun's generation lives on Instagram. They do everything on Instagram. And yet everybody treated that as something unusual. And finally, in response to your question, you have to remember this. There's 75 ball players. There are 3 massage therapists. And they're only there during the season. And a player's schedule is such that he never knows when he's going to be able to do so. And so if you were able to review the text messages sent back and forth by different women in these cases, you will see a lot of start and stops, trying to schedule because he had a meeting he didn't expect. Or he would call and want something, a massage, within 8 hours later that afternoon. And you would find that they say, I can't do that. I need more notice than that. Many massage therapists require a day advance notice, et cetera. They're a combination of factors. You are right. The one thing we've never been able to overcome in people's perceptions, how could 22 people be wrong? And the answer to that is there's only one lawyer that grouped all of these cases. And that one lawyer, the beginning of the petition and the end of the petition, are cookie cutters. They're the same for each person. And then you go into the middle of their petitions and you see that they're talking about things that are totally different and theoretically, and yet all of the same symptoms exist in each one of them. And they're all drafted. The answer for that is they're all drafted by the same lawyer. And then you get to their depositions, and we've done 21 out of the 22, and their swearing under oath is different than what they've been claiming that was the basis of all the publicity to begin with. So that's a long monologue in answer to your question, but there were several things there.
We're talking with Rusty Hardin, who, of course, is the defense attorney for Deshaun Watson. Rusty, you know, there's certainly some bad blood between Deshaun and the Texans and the Texans owner, Bob McNair. Is it just a coincidence that Tony Busby lives on the same street 400 yards away from the owner of the Texans?
I wouldn't touch that with a 10-foot pole. It's a question deserving to be asked, but not deserving to be answered. Certainly not by me. There are a lot of questions as to how this all happened. How does one lawyer get 22 people, in such a short period of time? We're finding out from the depositions that at least one of the lawsuits was filed without even the woman's permission or knowledge, and she didn't discover until 5 weeks after the lawsuit was filed, when her name had to be released, that she was even a plaintiff. Okay? I mean, and so there are all kinds of suspicious circumstances about these cases. I'm trying not to get into that unduly myself, but at the end of the day, what the problem is, if we were in a court of law, we would be trying one case. And we'd be dealing with the facts of that case. We wouldn't be having to answer one case must be true because there are 22 of them. Mm-hmm. The final thing here that really, really concerns me about all this is this requirement that somebody has to prove a negative when you make the accusation. These are private encounters between a man and a woman. Could be a man and a man or a woman and a woman. Nobody else around. And so it becomes a matter of which one of them is telling the truth. The fact that others are making the same or similar allegations with whole different points doesn't make each individual's allegation true. They need to be judged on the merits. Deshaun has been put in the impossible position of responding first to what were anonymous allegations, now are named, and responding in a private encounter telling people, I believe very believably what happened in each case. He's now deposed 11 times. He'll be deposed another 11. And yet he can't prove that something didn't happen except by asking people, judge my background, judge my history, judge my answers now, along with the ability of the other person. Are there inconsistencies in different times in what they're alleging? Has their stories evolved? Have they gotten more sensational as time passed on? All of those are relevant things in being decided. And the final thing I would say is, I believe very strongly that these women's allegations ought to be listened to, investigated thoroughly, and everybody ought to have kept an open mind as to whether they happened. But similarly, I believe that Deshaun's objections and denials should have been listened to the listener until they had evidence. And that's what's really been denied here. Everybody's made up their mind based on the allegation made. And right now, if you look around the country, what's happening? If an allegation is made against another person on any hot-button social issue, because the activity that they're complaining of is such a serious social issue, and I believe it is, and should always be taken seriously and investigated clearly, because it's such a hot issue, the presumption of innocence goes out the window, and the allegation is treated as truth of the matter. And that's been the box Deshaun's been in from the very beginning. He's not the guy. The guy they describe is not the guy we know. And yet he hasn't been given the benefit of the doubt, and he should have.
Rusty, will Deshaun decide to settle, and what would it take to do that?
Settlement has been talked about a couple of times because there's obviously a desire to get all this behind him. The NFL wants to get a decision out before the season opens. I know they do. I mean, when and where, I don't know what's going to happen, but they're going to want to make their decisions, and we decide whether to disagree with they want to get it over. Deshaun wants to get it over. They want to get it over. The problem is dealing with the other side. For instance, they almost settled. In April, we were willing to make a small amount of money available to each woman, but we wanted it to be public. And the lawyer objected and insisted on a non-disclosure agreement. I was naive at that time and thought that would be fine with them. We were saying we wanted whatever settlement there was to be public so the public could measure the amount of money and how that matched up with whether or not it was really something that had happened or whether we were paying a small amount to get it behind us so we could move on. Busby objected to he would not settle unless there was a non-disclosure agreement. At that time, it broke down over that. And then fast forward to Miami. Miami says, and this is where I misjudged, Miami said, we'll take our chances on the criminal case, whatever that happens in the future, but we have got to have a non-disclosure agreement and the settlement of all 22 women. Deshaun wanted to go to Miami. Miami wanted him. Miami made a proposal to the Texans that the Texans said they would accept if Deshaun accepted it. And so the issue was, can it be settled before November 2nd trading deadline? We had to hold our nose and try to get that settled. And then the all 22 women weren't willing to settle. And it turns out, ironically, that two of them didn't want to settle because they did not want a non-disclosure agreement, the very thing that we had taken, position we'd taken in April. So that's it. As to whether or not there'll be any settlement in the future, look, obviously, in the ideal world, it would be good to get 22 lawsuits behind him. But as to whether or not there's going to be one depends upon all kinds of circumstances that we're not even willing to consider right now. There are no settlement conversations going on. We're focusing on dealing with the NFL and their investigation, and we're not even going to think about anything, possible settlements, until that's concluded.
Rusty, do the Browns want him to sign an NDA?
They haven't said. By the way, while you mention the Browns, though, I do want to say this. I think they've been hugely unfairly treated about a couple of things. Number one is this idea that they didn't talk to the women. And that all of a sudden got traction with the media. That is just insane. No sane lawyer advising the Browns would have advised them to go potentially interfere with a criminal investigation by talking to the women. They knew what the women said in their petitions. They knew the women were going to give depositions. They knew what the women said. And if they had started trying to talk to these women further, they would be running in danger of interfering or obstructing justice and interfering with an investigation. So they were not only right in judgment, but right in the eyes of criminal investigators. They'd have no contact with the women. They would need to look to other sources to satisfy themselves as to whether they wanted to hire Deshaun. And so I've always thought they took because by the way, that's what all teams did. It wasn't just the Browns. Nobody wanted to risk obstruction of justice charges. They were not going to talk to the victims, because the alleged victims, because they didn't want anybody to think they were interfering with the investigation or trying to affect it at all.
I agree with you there, but I also have to point out that after the no bills came back, isn't there a window there if they wanted to then to talk to them that they could have? Because that's a piggyback to the other question I wanted to ask you. Well, go ahead and answer that, sure. And then I got one more for you.
Yeah. Could they legally have done so? But yeah, but do you really think the women would have talked to the NFL any more than they already had? A lot of people have forgotten that I don't know how many, at least 11 women, I think, I have no certainty about this, did talk to the NFL. There'd be no reason to go to the others. I think you're going to find, well, this is all over, we've had no discovery from the NFL, I don't know. I'm going to guess that every single woman that filed criminal charges made himself available also to the NFL. I could be wrong because I don't know the exact numbers, but I'm sure the majority of people that made criminal complaints also interviewed the NFL. All right. And so as far as the team's going to do it, the danger of it looking like they're trying to affect the NFL investigation, because the NFL has a different agenda and a different concern than the owners and the teams do. So it's still a false issue. Plus, the criminal charges were not resolved, or the criminal allegations weren't resolved until mid-March. And then what happened is the dam broke. I always believed that the majority of teams that were interested in Deshaun, and that the Texans were willing to deal with, because they weren't going to deal with anybody in their division, that the dam would break once the criminal charges were resolved. And that was true. That's why you had four teams that make the cut in talking to him. Their biggest concern, my prediction was whether there were going to be criminal charges. And then once there were no criminal charges, all four teams decided they would let the 22 lawsuits be resolved in the civil system. And they were then going to seek to persuade Deshaun to come to them. And that's what happened.
Rusty, this past weekend, Deshaun took a trip to the Bahamas with his teammates, a bunch of Browns players. Was that something you think was a good idea for him to do? And did he ask you for any advice on that?
No, he didn't. I mean, and I would think it's a great idea. I mean, I wasn't aware that maybe your question sort of suggested maybe some people criticized.
There was some criticism.
It came off as tone deaf to a lot of people.
What was the criticism of it? That's what I don't know.
I'll tell you, I saw an article that said you had said like he was unavailable for depositions in May or around May because he had a full-time job and he had to get prepared for the season. And then he takes a group of guys to the Bahamas. It came off to some as tone deaf.
Well, you know what? That's what we've been frustrated about. The team wasn't practicing. What did he do? He went 3 days, didn't he?
Yeah, about that.
Yeah, something like around that. Yeah.
All right, guys. All right, let's just think about this. He came down here and gave a deposition on Friday, okay? And he actually then went back up. He gave a deposition this past Friday, or 2 weeks ago now. What are we? It's coming Friday. When he went, they weren't playing. They weren't practicing at the time he took the team. And then he came back for it. And so a new quarterback is the team, and he's trying to bond with a group of guys he's never met. They're going to start a season at the end of July, beginning of August. And he's actually, when he's in practice, he's not been giving depositions But every one of these, so here's another practical matter. This is the double standard. And I'm not fussing at y'all or anybody. The First Amendment is a hallowed amendment. And I'm not going to criticize anybody's opinions or expression of them. But think about this. We have had, the reason it's taken so long for us to take the women's depositions is they kept canceling them. And they'd say that work was in their way. The deposition we took yesterday was canceled and postponed for months because she said she couldn't break away from her job. All right? And she lived out of state. That kind of consideration has been given to the women repeatedly. Tony Busby, starting in April, said he could not do anything in April, and so we couldn't have any depositions that he wanted to participate in until sometime in May because he had a trial starting. And then the trial settled a week or two later, and he became available. But the point being is everybody's made these accommodations to their schedule. Remember this. DeShone is not seeking money of others. Others are seeking money from him. And he has a right to go on with his life as normal as possible until either law enforcement or court settings or judgments interfere with that. And I don't think there's anything wrong in the world by him trying to lead a normal life while this hellstorm is all around him.
Rusty, I have one more for you. I've heard from so many Browns fans since this occurred saying, like, man, make me feel good about this. Like, give me something that shows that the Browns did their due diligence and looked into this. What can you share with Browns fans about how the Browns investigated this, how they went about this? As we stated, they did not talk to any of the accusers. So how can you put Browns fans at ease that they that the Browns investigated this fully before pursuing this?
So I wasn't part of their investigation. I know that they hired local people, private people, unconnected with us, to look, find, and interview people as much as they could. They asked for access to anything we could give them in forms of documents or witnesses or so they could talk to. But they weren't going to rely on our word, just like I'm sure the public's not going to. I've always believed they weren't going to listen to us. And that's why many of the things I've been saying is based on in their own words and their testimony. And similarly, in the Browns case, they talked to as many people as they could. I don't personally have knowledge of who all it is, but I know that each team was out there scurrying around trying to find out what kind of guy is DeShone Watson. And should we take a chance on him being the leader of our team and our community? And all I can tell you is the Browns were satisfied because of their investigation and the young man's history. I can tell you we spent an incredible amount of time with him. He is a really good guy. He's a good person. He didn't do what he's accused of doing. And I think the Brown fans are going to find out that this is a hell of a great guy in his community. You got to go back and look at where he was and what his reputation was and all he did in this community before these lawsuits broke in March of last year. They have totally ruined this guy's reputation in a way that it'll take a very, very long time for him to recover from. He recognizes that. But at the end of the day, he's going to be, just as he's been since they started, the same guy that came out of this small town in Georgia. If you talk to the people that knew him there, the emails I get, I get all of these emails from women. One woman wrote me and said, I'm a 54-year-old white woman redneck. And I remember DeShone Watson from the time he was in the fifth grade on safety patrol, escorting kids to their cars in the rain. I followed the guy all through high school. I followed that guy all the way through Clemson, and I followed him from afar. And he is a wonderful human being. So I think that me saying that's not going to carry any weight at all. But I think what you're going to find if you start talking around Cleveland and around the people who started meeting him and the people that have known him, you will see that Haslam was right. He's gotten a hell of a guy, maybe a great quarterback, but he's just as good a person. And I think that only time will convince the Cleveland people of that. You're not going to see anything in this young man's conduct to criticize once he's there and a full-fledged member of the community.
Rusty Harden, defense attorney for Deshaun Watson. Thank you so much for the time. We really appreciate it.
I'm glad to talk to you guys. Y'all take care.
Thank you.
Thanks, Rusty.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track 4 games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.